in the trees, a potential snare. Close my eyes and block my ears. Cut the cord and leave me here.
Welcome back to Phantom Island, presented by Homefield. Stephen Godfrey, I want for you to imagine for a moment that you are, let's say, a like 14, 15 year old promising hockey prodigy.
Ooh, okay, cool.
Let's say you live
in... Can I have like long hair like that? The guy in, is it Mighty Ducks 2?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Can I be like more of an enforcer type?
It's your career, man.
Okay.
I don't know what the trajectory is for 14-year-old punk.
I'm thinking like 2000s era, like New Jersey neutral zone trap.
Okay.
I'm a physical player.
Okay, good to know.
I'm not finesse.
You're working out a lot.
I'm not one of these glory boys from fucking the Czech Republic, Ryan. I'm a Canadian through and through.
All right.
We play physical.
So you are right. In this example, you're either going to be Canadian or a United States citizen. It's up to you. It doesn't really matter which one. I want to walk out what your paths looked like, and I'm using the past tense here because they have recently changed, of what you could have done with your hockey career.
Okay.
Number one, you could have gone and played for the CHL league in your region. It does matter where you live for purposes of who can draft you in the CHL, but once you're 16,
really?
You can go, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And despite its name, the CHL includes lots of north of the United States as well.
So CHL stands for Canadian Hockey
League? Canadian Hockey League, yes.
Okay, and this is for like, is this what we call... I will be playing the part of a very ignorant person today.
I'm pretty ignorant, and
it's a role I was born to play.
That's fine.
So I am a teenager.
Yeah, I am the piano teacher who's one lesson ahead of you here.
Okay.
For whatever it's worth.
And I am 15, 16 years old.
Let's say 15.
Okay. Yeah. And you said it doesn't matter if I'm in Canada or the US?
For these purposes, yeah, it's pretty irrelevant. Yeah.
All right. Let's just say I'm in like either New England or like Minnesota, Wisconsin.
Okay.
Just a place sure. Where we have a lot of hockey players.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And so what is the CHL and why wouldn't I just be playing for my high school team?
Okay, so the CHL is actually composed of three different leagues: the Western Hockey League, the Ontario Hockey League, and the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League.
French always got to be weird.
It is a developmental, what I will call like a semi-pro league, in the sense that there is money, and this is what we're going to get into in a little bit here, but there's not a lot of money going into it. This is where
is juniors?
Yeah, you could, yes.
When
yes,
I'm a kid, like Canadians always talk about, like when I was in juniors.
There's also younger than this as well, which is why I'm saying it's not like the only junior hockey
like
league.
Super juniors or juniors?
Now you're straight. I said I'm one lesson ahead of you,
oh my God.
I can't get further
right.
than that. But yes, it is the three major junior ice hockey leagues in Canada all work together as the CHL.
Okay.
It is the method by which, I would say, last count, the majority of players in the NHL have come through the CHL to get there.
All right.
It used to be a lot higher than that.
American or Canadian?
Correct.
Okay.
Just overall.
All right.
Europe obviously has its own feeder system as well. We're not going to talk about Europe or Russia or any of that in today's episode at all. We're just going to talk about Canada and the United States.
And the CHL.
All right. So that's option one for you. Now, when you go play for the CHL, the rules as they used to exist meant that was your path. You could not then go say, okay, I'm going to go play 2 years, a year or two in the CHL, and when I'm 18, I'm going to come back to the United States, and I'm going to play NCAA hockey. I'm going to play for Minnesota. I'm going to play for BU. I'm going to play Denver.
I cannot do this.
Correct. That's how the rules used to work.
Is that because I was compensated for my
that is
labor?
That is exactly right. The NCAA's perspective on this was that you had played pro hockey, and therefore, you had lost your eligibility to play college hockey. That was the rule as it
is. I mean, yeah. Old school NCAA. I follow you so far. Makes total
now,
sense.
Let's say you wanted to avoid the CHL in the first place. You could go through the United States Hockey League, which is similar to the CHL.
Okay.
In that it starts when you're 16. Both of these have an age maximum as well, which we're going to get into.
Uh-huh.
But if you went through the USHL, because it was a strictly amateur league, it did not impact your ability to then decide to go on to college. And lots of USHL players end up playing NCAA hockey as well.
Why would I make the determination of one versus the other if only for the fact that I'm trying to preserve my ability to play college hockey? Mm-hmm. Is that it?
A lot of it actually, I think, just came down to like, A, remember, you're a 15-year-old making this decision. 15-year-olds, yeah. Like,
idiots.
It's a tough time to have to make a decision that largely impacts what your, you know, the next 5 to 6 years of your future are going to look like.
So, but it sounds like, so let's say like I'm a promising young hockey player.
Yeah.
I can go to this league that gives me like what sound, it doesn't sound like much money, stipend or something like mm-hmm. that. In hopes of me making it to the NHL one day and becoming a like famous and rich hockey player.
Yes, I think the argument. Or yes,
I have to have the wherewithal.
Yep.
And the maturity to choose against that path, even though that might be statistically the best possible path for mm-hmm. me to become the NHL player I've always wanted to be.
Yeah.
To just in case preserve the ability to play college hockey if I'm not as good as I think, or if something were to happen.
Yeah, well, I think that's part. That's a big part.
Really
of it.
Stupid so far.
The CHL, for most of its history, I think it's fair to say, has been regarded as the superior feeder mechanism to the NHL over the NCAA. The NCAA has caught up significantly over the last 10 to 15 years, and now there are a lot more NCAA players who make their way into hockey, including some of the top. Like, you're seeing more top picks or first round guys get picked from college hockey, whereas before I think it was much more CHL dominated.
Is there a reason
why that was? Well, I think the reason largely was that the CHL was designed around training. Like, it is truly a juniors program. It's made for, we're building hockey, professional hockey players,
right?
And there were things you could also do, like, you could draft players a little earlier. You could, like, you could develop. Okay. You could, I think, to my best understanding at this point is that if you went through the CHL,
yeah,
the NHL could have an earlier impact on your growth and development. Whereas if you were in the NCAA, there was more of a, like, we have a dividing line here, and
you
even what
a
you can do,
master.
Right? You couldn't, like, until, again, the rule changes that we're going to talk about,
yeah,
you couldn't participate in training camps with NHL teams, even if you didn't make any money off of them, if you were an NCAA player. CHL, obviously a lot more movement back and forth that would not raise any red flags.
Okay, so is the change in trend that you're mm-hmm. seeing a higher level of, or a higher number of former NCAA players in the NHL, is that because of the rule changes we're talking about today?
No, because these rule changes are very recent.
I am soccer.
Very, very.
I am soccer level confused, Ryan.
That's okay. There's one more entity that we're going to talk about, and I should emphasize, we are just scraping the surface of, like, hockey development organizations. These are just, we're going to stop here because we can't go any further. There's also U Sports, basically the college athletics institution in Canada. That's another way you can continue your hockey career. You can, at the time before this rule change and now, you can play in the CHL and go through U Sports as well.
When you say youth sports.
U Sports.
Oh.
The letter U, sports, all one word.
Again.
It is how Canadian college hockey.
I've never played dumber than I will in this episode today. Okay.
Now that said.
So hang on, pause again.
Mm-hmm,
idiot re-summarizing.
Go for it.
It sounds like, based off what you've laid out so far,
yeah,
that the Canadians correctly identify the fallacy of making a 15-year-old sort of permanently choose and this wall off these potentials. And then, as far as the NCAA in America,
sure.
It sounds like in Canada, there's a more forgiving and understandable system in case you are not the next whatever, Gretzky, Kane, etc., and you can still have the ability to play what we would call college hockey in the States.
Yes. That said, U Sports is a very, very small feeder program. In terms of how many players are we putting into the NHL, the NCAA is eating U Sports lunch, and it has for a little bit of time. So if we're just talking about where is your best pathway to become a professional hockey player, because that's the thing you 15-year-old enforcer Stephen Godfrey really want more than anything in the world.
Cross-checking.
You have a tricky question, which is, do I go play? Again, you're 15 right now. You can't go play college hockey for a few years. Mm. So should you go to a dedicated juniors program where you can start when you're 16?
And void your ability.
You
to
can,
play.
Yes. You could do the same thing with the United States Hockey League, Not quite the same level, smaller program overall, but it is an option and still preserves your ability to go to college later. And also, most of all, you have to make these decisions depending on where you live. If you live in Canada, you're probably more oriented to say, like, well, of course I'm going to go play in the CHL. I know guys who have done that. I've met people who have said that's what I should do. This is the experience I've never been to. Like, I'm sure the Beanpot is great. I've never been to Boston. It means nothing to me.
But also, if I'm just if I'm a 15-year-old in Ontario,
yeah,
there's apparently a preserved path for me to chase the CHL to NHL
and still
pipeline
go to college
and
in Canada.
Still play hockey in college.
Yes, yes. But what we're talking about is how the world used to work, and it's not how the world works now. Because as of August 1st, 2025, now the NCAA has said that you can maintain your NCAA eligibility even if you're a professional hockey player, provided you have not been compensated beyond, quote, actual and necessary expenses. So you can't receive a salary. But you can receive stipends that cover meals, lodging, apparel and equipment, coaching and instruction, health and medical insurance, transportation, facility usage, entry fees, and other reasonable expenses. How much do you think the stipend in the CHL is and has been, roughly? On a monthly basis, what do you think CHL players are getting?
I don't know, but I was a hockey parent for 3 seasons.
Okay.
And I don't know if I could guess a number that feels too high.
Okay.
Hockey is brutally expensive.
It's about $600 a month.
What?
That the stipend ends up being. Yeah, there's a lot. From my understanding, like, if you are in the CHL, it's a little bit like a student exchange program in some regards. Like, you might live with a host family.
Okay.
A lot of these
Wait,
are like high schoolers.
Wait, $600 a month is supposed to cover everything that you just said?
Yeah.
$600 Canadian.
Yeah. It's not a ton of money that we're talking about.
All right,
and
okay.
In the past, it has been said, this would eliminate your ability to play NCAA hockey.
Okay, all right.
So that brings us to this rule change. Now, I want to ask you, first of all, why do you think the NCAA changed its tune and decided, you know what, young, promising scholars from north of the border, they deserve a chance to play in the Big Ten. They deserve a chance to play in Hockey East. They deserve a chance to be an Arizona State Sun Devil. Why do you think the NCAA made this change?
Nice touch there. Because they're trying to widen the base of potential hockey players in the NCAA to preserve their product.
Steven, you fool. It's because they got sued. It's always because they got
shit.
Sued.
Yeah. I walked right into that one.
There is a ongoing class action lawsuit called Masterson v. NCAA, in which it's basically been argued that this setup amounts to an antitrust violation, that this is designed to sort of limit player options, limit player mobility in ways that aren't reflective of what happens elsewhere in sports.
Yeah.
Yes. So so this is 100% a response to...
Did these idiots ever do anything before they get obliterated in court?
So this
apparently
is,
no.
This is in response to act. Now, that said, they haven't lost this lawsuit yet. Lawsuit's not done because of this rule change, but it definitely is seemingly in response to this lawsuit that's been brought against them. So NCAA makes this change. They passed the rule in November 2024. It just took effect this past season. Do you know anyone by the name of Gavin McKenna? Does that name mean anything to you?
No. Is he a player?
He is a player. And I'm going to tell you more.
Yeah. Gavin McKenna, that's a young hockey player by name.
I'm going to tell you more about Gavin McKenna right after we hear a little bit from Home Field Apparel. By the time you're listening to this episode, your holiday gift giving is probably done for the year. Presents have been wrapped and distributed. Thank yous, both genuine and faked, given back in return. Good job. You made it through this year. It's time to relax. Wrong. It is time to start prepping for 2026 gifts. Did you know National Bird Day is January 5th? If you have a friend or loved one who cares about Ball State, Iowa, Miami, South Carolina, Delaware, Creighton, Louisville, Air Force, Eastern Michigan, Kansas, Illinois State, UTSA, or any other school with a bird mascot, and yes, Auburn counts here, they might be counting on you. You can't ruin Bird Day for them. don't risk destroying the true meaning of Bird Day by failing to go to Homefield and purchasing some of the most comfortable and stylish collegiate apparel you can find. Bird shirts, Bird hoodies, Bird joggers, Bird hats, Bird jackets. Bird Day is waiting, and Homefield is here to get you ready. Go Birds! Steven, we're recording this episode on December 15th. We're recording this one a little earlier than when it's actually going to go out. That's important because in 5 days, Gavin McKenna will turn 18 years old.
Okay.
Gavin McKenna signed a first of its kind, or certainly most notable of its kind, NIL deal with Penn State this offseason. Now, under the old rules, he would not have been eligible to play college hockey at all because he spent 3 seasons preceding this playing for the Medicine Hat Tigers in the Western Hockey League. That's awesome. CHL league.
It's a CHL team.
Yes.
So, again, idiot summarizing. Mm-hmm. According to the old rules, if you had played in the CHL, you would have then received some sort of compensation. The NCAA would have considered
modest compensation.
A bridge too far.
That's right.
To your amateurism, your white, silky, dewy the innocence.
The purity of your sports. God. Yes.
All right. That's okay. Right. Yeah, I gotcha. Right. Okay. But now he's playing at Penn State. So now something happened. Okay.
Penn State. Yeah, yeah. He was the subject of, again, as with all things NIL, college football and basketball fans are going to be familiar with this. There are no hard numbers here, but rumoredly, Penn State won a bidding war against Michigan State for Gavin McKenna services, where he's getting what is supposed to be $700,000 in NIL cash to come play for the Nittany Lions.
Awesome.
Now, this is going to be fun
for him.
Because it's going to come up on another episode that, depending, I think we haven't done it yet. This is the disadvantage of recording things ahead of time.
We're talking out of time.
Do you know who one of the biggest boosters at Penn State is?
Yes, I do. Owner of the Buffalo Sabres.
That's right.
Terry Bagula.
That's right.
Yeah, I do know that. Because now, I've been to that arena when I was on campus for a football thing. Like, yeah. Maybe the year it opened.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
It is a very nice hockey arena.
Yes. Gavin McKenna is not alone in this movement. He is not the only person who's left the CHL to go into the NCAA.
Okay.
All told, there have been more than 100 players who made this transition this past season. But important to note,
probably not all of them making 700 grand.
I would say a vast majority of them are not making 700 grand. And according to Dan McKenzie, who I believe is the CHL league president, of all of those players who left for the NCAA, only 19 moved for their seasons where they were 17, 18, or 19. Here's why that's important.
Okay.
CHL has an age maximum. You have to be you can't be older than 20 when the season starts. You can turn 21 in the middle of the season, but if you're 21, you have aged out of CHL eligibility.
Yeah, you're not in juniors anymore. Yeah.
So obviously this led to situations where you had guys who had been in the CHL for a long time, maybe weren't going to get drafted, maybe weren't ready for the NHL.
Yeah.
But they couldn't go play college hockey because by virtue of being in the CHL at all, they had been eliminated.
Right.
So there was no home for them left in the CHL. You're 21. You can't play in this league anymore.
Please tell me they went to the ECHL.
You have college hockey eligibility left. You have college hockey years in you, but you don't have eligibility is what I should say.
Okay.
So a lot of the movement that has happened has not been this wholesale movement of talent fleeing the CHL at very young ages for the NCAA. It's more of a graduation point.
What did those players stuck in the liminal space do?
Some of them tried to catch on with the NHL just on their own. Some of them probably went to U Sports because they still could play Canadian hockey.
Go into those like American minor leagues that I wasn't joking
about? Oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they floated around like places like that. But yeah, they couldn't.
They played for the Macon Whoopee or the Monroe Moccasins?
The one place Bandits, I know they couldn't go.
Pensacola Ice Pilots?
You're just showing off at this point. The one place I know they couldn't go was into the NCAA.
This is big dumb so far.
It is big dumb, but it gets interesting because it sort of leads to a lot of questions about when we think about sort of what's changed in college football or college basketball, it has none of the changes that we've seen in terms of NIL, the transfer portal, whatever. They haven't structurally changed. Like, well, if you want to be a pro athlete in these sports, what do you do? Like, if you want to be a pro basketball player, more likely than not, you're going to go play a year in college. Mm-hmm. Not everybody. And the G League is a thing, and yeah, you can play internationally, yeah. But it hasn't substantially.
So what you're getting at is that in football, basketball, and so far in baseball, we have not upset the tried and true practice, your path.
The normal pathways.
The steps
exactly.
are the
yes.
same.
Yes. And in a weird way, there is a possibility that we are improving the pathway or giving players a more... more options in their pathway.
In hockey or?
In hockey.
Okay.
In hockey specifically. Okay. And here's what I want to walk through with you here.
All right.
So again, now you're again 15-year-old enforcer, Stephen Godfrey.
Mm-hmm.
A mean mug if ever there
Ducks
was one.
Ducks fly together.
That's right. You decide to go play in the CHL.
Okay.
You want to get good immediately.
Okay.
Now, there are still a few things you have to do if you want to eventually go on and play college hockey. You have to be eligible. You have to have academic eligibility, and there are certain courses you have to take. Like, you can't just sort of jump from CHL to college without meeting the NCAA's academic requirements. You still have to do all of that.
Okay. When you're in the CHL, are you going to school?
I believe you are, yes, but you're not necessarily going to school with an eye towards, I need to make sure that I am hitting the academic requirements that the various NCAA institutions would require.
You are planning on going pro in something that is sports.
Some of it's that, but some of it's also that if you're in the CHL and you know you can't go play for an NCAA institution, why would you think about, well, I got to get this ACT score, or well, I got to take these core classes, whatever. You might be thinking about, what do I have to do for U Sports? But U Sports has their own set of standards, and that's a more understood pathway. So I think just in this intermediate period right here, there have been some players who thought, well, okay, I'm going to go jump to the NCAA. And there is some element of like, well, you haven't taken like enough credits in this area or that area. And this is just the thing we require of NCAA athletes as high schoolers, whether they're, you know, wherever they come from.
Okay.
So that's part of it. But now you can say, I'm going to go to the CHL. I'm going to do a couple years there. One of the biggest advantages that the NCAA has trumpeted for why their players should, why you should come there, why you should develop there, why you should go play pro hockey from there, older ages. You're playing against 22, 23-year-olds.
Okay.
22, 23-year-olds are bigger. They hit harder. They're a lot closer in size to the players you're going to see in the National Hockey League. One of the, I think, demerits that people would apply to the CHL in some cases was, well, you've been playing against guys who are max 20. So you
right,
are playing
Right, so to
against,
review, yes, if I'm 20, I'm out.
Once you're in the CHL, yes, once right. once you turn 21,
yeah.
you cannot play another new season in the
but
CHL.
You could also, but in college, you could be 23, 24.
100%.
Some of us might attest you could be older
sure,
in college.
Sure.
Okay.
So part of the advantage that some of these players now have is you can go to the CHL, you can develop a little bit there, and then you can say, all right, it's time for me to go play against physically larger and stronger players and get more used to a more physical style of play closer to what I will see in the NHL in some regards.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right.
So that's the potential advantage that you have there. Now, I did look, because I always have to look at numbers.
I just want to summarize so far. That's a great selling point.
Yeah.
Making $700,000 is also a selling point.
That part is also good, too. Yeah. Yes, yes. And what's interesting, without getting too far in the weeds here, is that so the House settlement, obviously, you and I have thought about it mostly in terms of football. It does have impacts on a variety, on every other sport, really, for the schools that opted into it. One of the changes is that Division I hockey programs that opt in have a roster cap of 26 players.
Mm-hmm.
Now, historically, men's hockey teams have carried around 29 players. They had scholarship limits that said you could only have 18 total scholarships, but you could have 29 players. They would have 29 players on the roster as a whole. Losing three players off a roster is tough. injuries happen, fatigue happens. Like, there are some differences here. One of the other differences between NCAA hockey and CHL hockey, length of the season. CHL is a much longer, much more involved season. NCAA hockey, more compact in terms of number of games played.
Well, the Frozen Four is like an early... It's a spring sport.
Yeah, I never remember exactly how they categorize all of them. But yes, the last year's Frozen... Or this year's Frozen Four, the 2025 Frozen Four.
It takes us in March, right?
To April.
Okay.
Yes. So looking at last year's teams, we had Western Michigan winning their first title against BU. WMU finished the year with, I'm going to pull it up here, 34-7-1 was their overall record.
Okay.
So, just some small differences that matter here and there. The college side of this is very confident that this is going to play to their advantage significantly. Not necessarily at the expense of the CHL, but it will make college a more attractive option for them. This is Hockey East Conference Commissioner Steve Metcalf. Currently, the NHL is made up of about one-third of players that come directly from college. That number is going to grow to two-thirds in no time at all, and I haven't been able to find anyone that doesn't think that's the track we're on, end quote.
Okay. Okay. I was about to ask a question, but
yeah,
keep
going.
No, keep going.
Ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I'm failing to see a huge problem here so far.
It's less problem and more, it will be interesting to see, to borrow a quote from John Boyce, it will be interesting to see what happens next.
Yes.
Because it is throwing the status quo of how hockey talent moves up through the ranks into a disarray of sorts. Now, part of the immediate problem is that the CHL has dealt with a big talent exodus. Some of it is talent that had aged out, but I think it's in terms of recruiting and in terms of making the pitch for what you should do, it's not necessarily bad, but it is changing. The CHL and the NCAA, for most of their respective existences, have been at odds. And from reading articles that from
Office Sport, yeah. Hang on, the CHL and the NHL?
The CHL and the NCAA.
Okay, that's what I thought. Sorry. Okay.
Sorry, if I misspoke. Yeah. CHL and the NCAA, for most of their existence, have been at odds.
Makes sense. You're essentially, so you're not competing businesses, but you sort of are.
You're competing visions, certainly.
I mean, you're drawing against the same labor pool.
Yes.
That's the biggest thing.
Yes. And I think even less that your competition against the same labor pool, you have decided, or the NCAA decided, like, there is no commingling here.
Right.
Once you're in this pool, you can't go to this other one. And by the same virtue, like, if you enroll in college, if you do a year in college, okay, now you're 19, you basically have no CHL time left if you decided to go the other route.
Like, yeah.
I'm not going to say it never happens,
yeah,
but pretty rare. That relationship has changed drastically where, I should say this more so than maybe any other episode we've ever done, I leaned heavily on the research others have done. So The Athletic did a lot of writing about this, Front Office Sports. There's a good Substack called College Hockey Insider.
Okay.
That was very helpful to help me sort of like understand this
getting
world
through all this.
And
yeah,
and try to understand what's happening here.
Sure.
These leagues are now talking to each other because now there is an option to sort of say like, well, we should make a more unified pitch. We should say like, hey, you can do both of these things, or hey, you can try this, and if it's not for you, you still have this option open to you.
Provided that one side is talking to the other.
100%. And there has been significantly more talking to each other in that regard. Now, there are a couple of groups that this might be potentially bad for. One is the United States Hockey League. The United States Hockey League was the U.S. version of the CHL, very clumsily. We're just going to call it that. But now doesn't have as strong of a sales pitch because if the pitch before was come play juniors hockey here, maintain your, like, A, we have a pretty good track record of putting guys into the NHL long term, and you maintain your eligibility to play college hockey if that's important to you, if you're from the U.S. and your parents really want you to, you know, go play at Harvard or this, that, and the other, that edge doesn't exist anymore. You can go do that in the CHL without penalty.
That seems like the first organization then that's on the chopping block.
There are rumors that it may get absorbed into the CHL. It may just become part of the CHL apparatus.
Is that the worst thing in the world?
I think it depends on who you talk
just
to.
Just a death of tradition
possibly.
Or something?
Okay, yeah, okay. I think it's sort of... It's also potentially very tricky now for U-Sports hockey, because if you were the Canadian college hockey organization, you could say, well, you're a CHL player. It didn't quite work out for you, or it hasn't quite worked out for you to go to the NHL, but guess what? Our door is always open to you. Now you have American college hockey that says, yeah, it turns out we are too. And so now I think your talent pool is drastically
impacted. Make a guess here. Yeah. I can't remember any of the names of the Canadian university. McGill is one in Montreal.
Let's look up the U Sports hockey standings just for fun here.
What I'm guessing at is that these Canadian schools are not offering $700,000 NIL deals.
No, I would say that, yes, I would say that is the case. If we're talking about the University of British Columbia is up here.
Yeah.
Trinity Western. These are not places I know a lot about. I'm not going to lie to you and pretend like I have a deep understanding of youth sports hockey.
Yeah.
But no, they are not in a position to make competitive $700,000 offers to the Gavin McKennas of the world,
who happen to be playing at the university that is essentially underwritten. Their hockey program is underwritten by an NHL owner.
Correct.
Which is another conflict.
But. One of the other interesting things, and this is not necessarily a change in hockey, is that you can get drafted by an NHL team and still play collegiate hockey. You can't sign a contract. There's certain things you can and can't do when you are when you have an agent. Mm-hmm. Like, there are a lot of rules still around.
Which is different than the sports that I normally cover.
Right, yes. But like another player, Porter Malone was the sixth pick in the 2025 entry draft. He's playing for Michigan State right now. Roger McQueen, he was the 10th pick.
Yeah.
He's going to go play for Providence. He's playing for Providence while he develops. So that's not new, and I did check that. That's not a new development, but I think...
The franchise holds the professional rights.
Yes,
and
exactly.
And for a limited amount of time, they're allowed to play at the collegiate level.
Yes. This happens in the CHL too. This is a thing you can do in the CHL too. It just doesn't necessarily last as long because your CHL eligibility
is shorter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now I did look into I wanted to see sort of like numerically what impact is this having on NCAA hockey right now.
Okay.
And I just decided to say, all right, I'm gonna look at the current leaders across NCAA hockey in points per game. And I just want to see, are these young guys coming in and, or are these CHL guys rather coming in
just
and dominating things? The answer is not really. The points leader right now, at least when we're recording this, is Hayden Stavroff, who plays at Dartmouth, leader in points per game. He did play in the BCHL.
All right.
So he does have a background.
So Dartmouth has the leader in points per game right now?
Yes, that's right. Now, this is BCHL is a junior A league, so I think he probably could have come in anyway. He didn't come from like the CHL proper.
Yeah.
But looking through it, it's like there's not this influx of Gavin McKennas of the world who are coming in, and it's like they're completely reshaping what college hockey looks like. Most of the points per game leaders right now are guys who are too old to play CHL hockey at all. Not all of them, but a lot of them are at this point.
Okay. So Sorry, keep going. Yeah, the system seems to be sorting itself out.
Yes. In the short term, I think this is very good for NCAA hockey because as Frank Serator, who's been the Air Force hockey coach since 1997, pointed out, like, he said coming into the season, I've spoken to a lot of coaches who feel their fourth lines this year are going to be as good or better than their second lines. Like, this is leading to a lot of depth and a lot of, like...
So
one thing this will potentially change is who makes an NCAA roster. If you were potentially going to be like a third line player on a college hockey team because you had maintained your eligibility, because you had maybe played for the USHL, because you hadn't gone to Canada. Well, now that's going to change because now those spots are open to CHL players, CHL guys who have gone through a different process, and they have, you know, different scouting on and things.
Ryan,
like
are the
that.
Canadians taking our dribs?
I don't know.
You took your
dribs? I don't know if they're taking our
dribs. Canadians took our dribs?
There's, it's, I will say with all this.
They took our school?
It's too early to
what?
Tell. This is horrifying.
This would be, I guess, a mark against NIL in that you would have, if you want to follow the spirit of the thing, which yeah. some people do, someone who is going to be a true student athlete
mm-hmm.
might have a harder time of that if an ex-CHL ringer, if you will, yeah. is just looking to make some NIL money and going to take your spot sure. At a prestigious university sure. that happens to have a hockey team.
Yeah, sure. It's at to ascribe no values or morals to it whatsoever. It's a more competitive environment. These the number of spots has actually gone down because of the house settlement. Like now there's only 26 spots instead of 29 on most men's hockey teams. And there's this whole new group of CHL guys who can compete for those spots. And as we said, over 100 of them entered college hockey this year. So you have squeezing going on at both ends.
There is a, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a bottleneck happening. Overall, and I guess this is improving the like the quality of play or the quality of player at least in mm-hmm. college hockey, which would make for like I guess better games in theory.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the spirit of the thing is that some there are some handful of players right now who have been boxed out of an opportunity to be on scholarship. Is what you're saying?
Yes, in theory, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe they have a lesser ability and they would have gotten a spot at BU or Minnesota or Denver or whatever
mm-hmm.
because five guys who are better than them had CHL experience and were not allowed to play for those schools that I just named.
Yes.
Okay.
So everything seems pretty... I think the picture I've painted for you so far is like, there's a lot of change. We're dealing with it once. It's going to have some unintended consequences, or there are going to be winners or losers because yeah, we're definitely. Shifting everything. But on the whole, it feels like seems like a system that's pretty inclined to fairness, has potential to be good for all parties involved. Like the CHL, for its part, potentially can get more young hockey players because they don't have to worry about like, well, if I come here, I can never play college hockey in the United States.
I've closed
that path off. So I think for the NCAA and the CHL, and maybe for the National Hockey League, I don't know how they feel about it, frankly, this is a system that has turned two things that were antagonistic to one another into maybe a symbiotic relationship.
Okay. The best players have more options.
Have more options. How about that? Yes, have more options. Now, I would love to throw a wrinkle into this for you.
Oh, God. Who got sued?
We've already talked about the lawsuit. This isn't the real one. You mentioned the ECHL.
Uh huh.
The ECHL. How would you describe the ECHL?
Oh God, a good time.
Is it
not a joke?
Does it sound like the CHL that I described to you? A bunch of teenagers.
The ECHL stood for East Coast Hockey League, I believe.
Yeah, still does.
Still does. Is yeah. it still
yeah.
kicking?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of fond memories here. The winter, maybe the first two Christmases that I was coming back from college
mm-hmm.
and stuck in Mississippi for like 3.5 weeks, I was like working a part-time job.
Yep.
And we would smuggle booze into like $5 ticket night for the Jackson Bandits.
Yeah.
My father-in-law was the team dentist for the Monroe Moccasins, which is awesome. And obviously my in-laws knew less than nothing about hockey in yeah. Louisiana.
Yeah.
It's a minor league hockey system, but like, I would describe it, and I might not be accurate here based on this, the intricacies of hockey. I viewed it as double A baseball.
Okay.
Is it not that?
I think that's a totally reasonable,
okay.
reasonable assumption.
Okay.
Jack Beck is a hockey player. I think he's a forward / center who last year played 40 games between the ECHL and the AHL, which is another minor league, but like a minor
yeah.
league where you get paid.
Yeah,
again,
I know
the amount
AHL
of money
is.
We're talking about is not crazy,
no.
but it has five figures now instead of three.
Please tell me this dude is enrolling in college now.
Jack Beck is on the roster at Arizona State.
Uh-oh.
He is not the only player who has done this. There are a couple. I'm not going to get this. You tell me how this word is pronounced. B-E-M-I-D-J-I. Bemidji?
Bemidji.
Bemidji? We don't know. We apologize.
No, I do. It's Bemidji.
Bemidji?
You're talking about the place?
Bemidji State University.
Yeah, Bemidji.
Okay, great. Thank you. You helped me significantly.
Yeah.
Bemidji State.
It's in Minnesota.
Got a couple of players like this who had played AHL or ECHL or something like that.
How did I know how to pronounce that?
Basically, what's happened is that they have it's a little bit different of a process, but the NCAA has allowed a couple of players like this who have made like money, again, not a shit ton of money, but money to come back and play college hockey, to go play at Arizona State.
Yeah. Okay.
A similar thing is happening in college basketball.
Sure, people are clutching their pearls right now.
Well, it is raising some interesting questions because number one,
it is a little bit of a mess.
Number
one,
I don't think the NCAA would do this if they weren't terrified of litigation.
Yeah.
They're
not happy about the ringer accusation.
Right. And through talking to one of our listeners, actually, who helped me do a little background research for this. Thank you to Jeremy for that. There is this sort of unclear line of like, okay, well, we think you can get guys qualified. We think you can get a guy into college if you have to be a certain age. You have to be, I think, within 5 years of your high school graduation date. Jack Beck's 22, I believe. And you have to. There's a question of like, well, how much money is too much money to have made? How professional is too professional that you sort of say, well, we can't do this?
Like, an existential question.
Jack Beck is a freshman on the ASU hockey team, even though he's played, he had this professional career. Now, again, we've seen this in.
Wait, can I back up and ask,
absolutely.
How did he start playing hockey?
What was his sort of path?
Yeah, because he ends up at the ECHL level. So did his career path take a sharp turn somewhere? And that's why we have such a strange path.
So he played for four seasons with the Ottawa 67s, which are a CHL team.
Okay,
I should
say. Where's he from?
He is from Ontario.
So standard path so far. He goes to juniors.
He went to major juniors. He played in the OHL, and he went from there to play 36 games with the Wheeling Nailers, Wheeling, West Virginia.
Yeah, baby.
And then played four AHL games with the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins.
Wilkes-Barre.
Is that how you say it?
I think so.
God, I don't know how to say anything. Stupid Florida.
I love maps.
Didn't teach me anything.
And accents.
I do know how to say weird places in Florida, but that doesn't come up in this conversation at all.
No,
anyway.
No, not in this one. So
this is on this is on his ASU bio.
This isn't heinous.
This
to
is
me.
On the
this
ASU
is not
bio.
Heinous to me.
He was granted delayed enrollment, and this is a bullet point on his bio. According to the NCAA Eligibility Center, Beck will have three seasons of eligibility to play in 5 years.
Right.
As part of the delayed enrollment rules, he's not eligible to compete in the first six games of the 25-26 season. We have played we're past that at this point. He has played in games. He has scored five goals. He has three assists in what looks like, I don't know, 10 appearances or so far.
Okay. How is this wildly different than back in my area of expertise? Mm-hmm. Someone like Chris Winkie, Drew Henson.
Yeah. Baseball.
Yes.
Yes. Go play baseball.
Yeah.
Doesn't work out. So I think the biggest difference is.
We changed sports. That's the biggest thing.
So that's the biggest difference, obviously. Yeah. And that I don't think there was a fear that, oh no, we're going to be inundated with failed pro baseball players who are trying to squeeze a little bit of college out of their time.
That's like, true.
So I think there is some concern. I don't know if I share it or not. I frankly don't know enough about this, that you're going to have 22-ish year old minor league hockey players who want to do the college thing. I don't know if that's bad. I don't know if that's a problem. I guess it kind of depends on like, does it work or not? But then it's like, do you want me to be mad if Arizona State figures out one weird trick that doctors hate and gets them, you know, yeah, further in hockey than they've been before?
We did a spot on a show, God, I don't know, last year?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it was a split zone duo. Do you remember Austin Ani?
Vaguely,
okay,
yeah.
Quarterback at North Texas. He was on the Arkansas roster briefly, yeah. Transferred to North Texas. He was 29 his senior season because he played 6 years for the Yankees minor league system.
Yeah.
And I think he had a kid too and like all this stuff. Yeah. He's married and they have a daughter. And I think I probably seized upon that just in like a joking way about like, oh, fellow dad or whatever at 29. Yeah. It looks like the highest he ever got was high A.
Yes.
Okay. The world didn't end.
Uh-huh.
Now, I know it's the same sport, so people have a sort of a particular feeling about that. Maybe it's akin to... Actually, nope. I can't... I was going to say it's like, oh, a guy, you know, bombs out of the NFL and he goes and enrolls in college. No, he would have almost had to have been in college in the first place and exhausted his eligibility
to work
this.
You would be out of eligibility or you would be past the NCAA's initial enrollment age window.
So... I'm trying to find the outrage here.
I don't know that there is any.
So there's none for me in hockey, just to be totally honest with you.
Yeah.
If a guy is routed from the age of 14 and 15 to try and be the best hockey player he can be.
Yeah.
And that route starts with like, we're going to take you to hockey school at 15, which is what the CHL sounds like to me.
Sure.
And we're going to put you in major juniors.
Yeah.
And then you're going to fail to make an NHL team, but you're going to end up in like a minor league team.
Yeah.
And then you decide, shit, I should get a college degree.
Yeah.
Fuck off. That's fine. Right. Everyone, fuck off, not to the person, to the situation.
Yeah.
Like, hey, man, you are pursuing something with maximum effort to the logical end. And mm-hmm. then now you realize, okay, I've pushed this. I probably don't have an NHL level of talent, but I have this talent could then parlay me into a free college education plus some NIL.
Yes.
And absolutely no one should stand in front of that.
And right now, McKenna does seem to be the outlier. Reading other things about what coaches have said about the NIL at work in hockey, they're like, yeah, we don't really think like we're swaying somebody's decision over like $25,000. $25,000 is not no money, but we don't think like, oh, we're completely like, you got to want to go to a school.
Right.
In the first place, to be like, yeah, that's the deciding factor.
Right.
Nobody is completely changing their lives over that amount of money.
Correct.
That's their belief.
So, all right, with that in mind,
yeah.
Then maybe it's basketball where people, Tom Izzo, the Michigan State basketball mm-hmm. head coach, was like chuffed at some school had a couple guys who had played maybe G League or some sort of semi-pro.
They'd played a little bit of I think lower G League. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, again, I don't see that. I can see why certain people of certain beliefs would get outraged about this.
Mm-hmm.
But if a guy is bouncing around like the NBA G League or he's playing European ball or something like that, and unless you can find me a more glaring example, that's as far as I'll take it.
Sure.
And then decides, oh, hey, I can get an NIL and a degree from wherever, Dayton or whatever. I just pulled Dayton because it's a basketball school.
Sure.
I don't care, and I think Tom Izzo shouldn't care, personally.
I'll give you one possible... So, okay, this is not Tom Izzo's case, I want to be clear. I think a lot of like the outrage that is happening where it's happening is a, like, this isn't how we've always done it. It's not that different from, like, I wasn't Greek, so I'm not going to say this is 100% accurate, but, like... a little bit of like, well, I got hazed this way, so you're going to get hazed this way.
That's exactly what it is.
I think there is an element of this that is maybe theoretical, but it's more about lack of clear rules and guidelines from the NCAA. A lot like what we saw in the pre-transfer portal world of you can transfer... and you don't necessarily have to sit out a season, but you have to tell us it's for a good reason. Your mom is sick. And she needs to be, you want to be closer to her.
Oh, yeah.
You have this, like.
You're pursuing a graduate degree and something that's not offered.
Yes. You remember there was a long time where to get a penalty-free transfer, You had to like make your case to the NCAA.
It was like, yeah, and it was heaven and earth for a while.
And there was not, even more so than like the standard was very high, it felt arbitrary sometimes over what was okay and what was not.
Definitely.
And so I can imagine some people who work in college sports are less concerned about like this change from an ethical standpoint and more about like, but you need to tell us what's okay and not. Because I don't want to go recruit some kid who made 30 grand playing semi-pro basketball, and then for some reason you tell me that one's not okay. Like, I think there is some element of like, if we're going to have rules, everybody needs to know what they are, so it doesn't feel arbitrary.
So to review, this is no different than any other aspect of the NCAA, which is that none of us, or at least the two of us recording this podcast, have any issue with someone making any amount of money, let alone a small amount, and then trying to still maintain their ability to better themselves by getting a degree and making money in the process.
Yep.
However, yes, logic, basic logic and human decency would say, like, we probably need a little bit more clarification in this, and we need to establish some sort of rule set for the betterment of both labor and management, comma, however, and this is how the story is always going to end, at least for now, we can't really advance any measures to provide any clarity because we are now officially running up against the definition of labor, which is that the NCAA were to probably push this any further, they would be up against, as this episode started, another lawsuit.
Yes. And that's where it all starts to... This is maybe where I think some people have what I will call reasonable fears. So much of the NCAA's rules make sense inside of the bubble in terms of, like, four-year eligibility or something like that. Or the idea of, you know, the five-year rules that more or less, I'm going to mangle it a little here, is like, your eligibility window starts ticking once your senior class basically graduates from high school. And after a certain age, even if you've never gone to college, even if you've never played pro sports, you would need a waiver or something sort of. But these are rules that, like, they're not bargained for. They're just sort of made up. And I think there is some fear of a Diego Pavia-like situation where it's like, well, if you sue, they're going to lose, and then you are going to have, like, 11th-year guys who are
college
like,
forever.
This is what I do, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, they don't want the next Goon sequel to take place at an NCAA member institution.
Sure. The other thing that all of this creates is, like, Penn State is not what I would call a traditional college hockey power. They went to the Frozen Four this past season, but that was the first time they'd ever done that. They've won the Big Ten Conference once. They've won the Big Ten regular season championship once. They are not the sort of like traditional powerhouse of Big Ten men's hockey.
Okay.
NIL, as we have seen with Indiana football, which we have to mention on every episode of Phantom Island. Obviously.
Number one, baby.
NIL creates opportunities to upset the balance of power in interesting ways.
Yes.
Is that available to everyone? Sure. There's no reason why traditional hockey powers, and, you know, in some ways, it may be that the Denvers of the world, and Denver is much more of a traditional hockey power at this point than Penn State is, are better situated because if you are operating in an overall athletic department and you have to think about, well, we need to allocate this much house money here and we need to hit up our donors for this much NIL, whatever. Mm-hmm. I can tell you because my grandfather played for him and was super pissed when they disbanded it. Denver doesn't have a football program that they have to think about at all for any of this. So maybe in an interesting way, this creates opportunities for hockey programs at schools that don't have some of these other major expenses to become, to swing like a bigger financial hammer in some ways than their peer members. Now, again, it helps that you have the owner of the Buffalo Sabres kicking you plenty of money if you're Penn State.
Yeah. So what I learned here today is that while a mess, it's maybe not the crisis that it's being made out to be. If anything, it's just a change towards modernizing compensation at a certain point and keeping options open for the athlete, God forbid.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
nice to know that other sports are clutching their pearls too, I guess.
I will say this. I in reading about this, by and large, the sort of like Jack Becks of the world maybe put them off to the side.
Okay.
Overall, I think everyone who follows college hockey and CHL hockey and hockey development, I think everyone's pretty on board with this, or at least they're interested to see what happens.
Sure.
Because it does seem like a pretty sensible set of options set forth. And it doesn't feel like, at least if we're talking about the NCAA, the Canadian Hockey League, it doesn't seem like it's going to cut either of them off at the knees. It's going to change what they look like. It's going to change sort of like how they operate.
Yeah.
But on the whole, I don't think institutionally, either from the principals involved or the people, you know, the commentators I've seen talking about it, I think everyone is cautiously optimistic.
Yeah. So the question here today, like as we always pose a question on Phantom Island, probably is NIL actually improving college hockey?
Maybe. And it's not just NIL in a weird way. It's the NCAA's loosening of amateurism standards. Hmm. The idea that, because I understand why the NCAA drew this line before. $600 a month was not a lot of money.
Right.
But you couldn't effectively say, hey, you can't get handshake. You're a college football player. You can't sell your autograph for $200.
Sure.
But you can be a hockey player who made $600 a month. Like, okay. I understand why there had to be some symmetry there.
What a surprise that loosening a completely arbitrary interpretation of amateurism made a sport better.
Phantom Island is produced by Michael Server. Our theme song is also called Phantom Island from the album of the same name by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.